जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना। यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यमुना तीरावन चारी। यमुना तीरावन चारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना। यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंदना। यमुना तीरावन चारी। यमुना तीरावन चारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस विरिवराज काचार्य स्तोत्र श्री श्रीमद हिस्वाइंग श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। निताय गो प्रेमानंदे हरि गो समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। आ गवेश दी असंबल दिवर्ची। श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवत्युत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 3 Chapter 21, Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. Text number 33. Maitreya Uvacha, the great sage Maitreya said, Evam, thus, tam, to him, Anubhashya, having spoken. Atta, then, Bhagavan, the Lord, Pratyak, directly. Aksha, by senses. Jaha, who is perceived. Jagama, went away. Bindu Sarasa, from the lake Bindu Sarovara. Sarasvatya, by the river Saraswati. Parishritat, encircled. Maitreya Uvacha. Evam tam anubhashyata Bhagavan pratyagakshaja Jagama bindu sarasa Sarasvatya parishritat Maitreya uvacha Evam tam anubhashyata Bhagavan pratyagakshaja Jagama bindu sarasa Sarasvatya parishritat Maitreya uvacha Evam tam anubhashyata Bhagavan pratyagakshaja Jagama bindu sarasa Sarasvatya parishritat Evam tam anubhashyata Rama bindu sarasa Sarasvatya parishrita Evam tam anubhashyata Bhagavan pratyagakshaja Rama bindu sarasa Sarasvatya Parishitat Evam tam anubhashyata Bhagavan pratyagakshaja Jagama bindu sarasa Sarasvatya Parishitat Translation, Maitreya went on. That's because Kardama and Lord Vishnu have been speaking to each other, so now we're back to the narrator, Maitreya. Maitreya went on. Thus having spoken to Kardama Muni, the Lord, who reveals himself only when the senses are in Krishna consciousness, departed from that lake called Bindu Sarovara, which was encircled by the river Saraswati. Srila Prabhupada's purport. One word in this verse is very significant. The Lord is stated here to be Pratyag Akshaja. He is imperceptible to material senses, but still he can be seen. This appears to be contradictory. We have material senses, but how can we see the Supreme Lord? He is called Akshaja, which means that he cannot be seen by the material senses. Akshaja means knowledge perceived by material senses. Because the Lord is not an object that can be understood by speculation with our material senses, he is also called Ajita. He will conquer, but no one can conquer him. What does it mean then that still he can be seen? It is explained that no one can hear the transcendental name of Krishna, no one can understand his transcendental form, and no one can assimilate his transcendental pastimes. It is not possible. Then how is it possible that he can be seen and understood? When one is trained in devotional service and renders service unto him, gradually one's senses are purified of material contamination. When one's senses are thus purified, then one can see, one can understand, one can hear, and so on. The purification of the material senses and perception of the transcendental form, name, and quality of Krishna are combined together in one word, pratyag-akshaja, which is used here. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurin miritamena tasmai shri gurve namaha Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We've had this interesting conversation between Kardamumuni and the Lord. We have many appearances of the Lord in Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Vishnu. We hear a lot of glorification about Lord Vishnu in Srimad Bhagavatam, because when he comes, of course, Lord Vishnu is an avatar, and in his avatar forms, whenever he descends, generally in the Bhagavatam, what we're hearing about is something in the context of something taking place in this material world. So the Lord makes his appearance, and the devotee offers prayers to the Lord generally. So we find a lot in the Bhagavatam where there are prayers about the majesty and greatness of the Lord, his great qualities, because in the material world, his Aishwarya is especially prominent. So there are many prayers in the Bhagavatam that emphasize that kind of thing. So we've just been hearing some of that, and of course the Lord is telling Kardamumuni that he's going to send him a wife so that he can carry out his service of helping to fill the universe with population. So Prabhupada in his purport, interesting purport, one word in this verse is very significant. The Lord is stated here to be pratyag-aksha-ja. He is imperceptible to material senses. That's what it means. It doesn't mean, then it says, but still he can be seen. That's not part of the definition of pratyag-aksha-ja, exactly. Well, actually the first part is Prabhupada is stating something. It's interesting the way that throughout this purport, you keep waiting for an answer, a direct answer, but he says, he kind of makes a little aside before he comes across with a final answer at the end of the purport. So pratyag akshaja. Now, pratyag means directly, I think, something like that. I forget to look it up. But akshaja, as Prabhupada says here, akshaja, well, he talks about adhokshaja. Akshaja means knowledge perceived by material senses. It's interesting, this word akshaja, because akshaja means, well, aksha means the senses. And ja, of course, ja, janma, we have so many ja words, actually, even in the English. Ja means generation. So many of these words that have to do with genealogy and genitals, these are all connected to this Sanskrit root, ja. So ja means birth. We all say janma, of course, is there. So this ja all has to do with that, propagation, something coming out, being manifest. So akshaja means it's something that is manifest to your senses. Now there's something to do with the Prabhupada explained this actually one place, that in Sanskrit, and the alphabet, just like we have A to Z, something to say something completely about something, you say everything from A to Z, you know. That house has everything from A to Z in it. So it's to show how inclusive something is. So in Sanskrit, you have ataksha. That's the A to Z in Sanskrit, sort of. The beginning, the first syllable in Sanskrit and the last syllable, aksha. So aksha means A to Z, you might say, in the Sanskrit way of looking at it. So aksaja means Krishna is beyond everything from A to Z. That's the idea. Because he's Adha Akshaja. He's beyond everything from A to Z. In other words, whatever is perceptible by our senses. Sort of play on the language, way of looking at it. So he's called Akshaja, Prabhupada says, which means that he cannot be seen by the material senses. Literally, it doesn't necessarily mean that, but because akshaja means knowledge perceived by material senses, generally, as I was explaining, that's generally the way the word is. I mean, literally, of course, aksha just means senses, so it could be used also for spiritual, but in the general way of speaking of things, when you talk about senses, you're talking about the material senses because you're here in this material world using your material senses. So then he says, because the Lord is not an object that could be understood by speculation with our material senses, he is also called ajita. So here Prabhupada brings in another word. I thought this was interesting because he says, ajita, then Prabhupada says, of course, jitta means to conquer. So he says, he will conquer, but no one can conquer him. So he's tying these two ideas together, being able to perceive Krishna and be able to conquer Krishna. So what seems to be implied is that when you perceive something with your senses, in a sense you're kind of in a sense, I'm talking about the senses, you're in a sense grabbing hold of it, you're acquiring it in some way, or at least you're acquiring the perception of that thing. So you're in a sense superior to the thing. You have some control over it. You have access to it. So he's saying that Krishna's not like that, just because with your senses, which generally we rely on to conquer so many things in the sense of perceiving them. That doesn't work with Krishna, not with your material senses. So that's why Prabhupada is using this, he's tying in this idea of you can't conquer him. You can't perceive him and you can't conquer him, you might say, with your perception, but with the strength of being able to overpower him, you could say, with your senses. Whereas in simple terms, we can say if Krishna wants to hide, you can't find him. You can't do it with your own power, no matter how hard you try. And of course, that's what science is all about, you might say. And they're trying to find the absolute truth, although they don't phrase it that way. But they're trying to find out what is the reality, what's behind it all. But it escapes them. What to speak of modern scientists, even great yogis, Brahma Samhita tells us, can travel at the speed of the mind for millions of years, not even get a glimpse of the radiance of Krishna's toenails. So he runs a lot faster. We have this nice graphic example in the story of Kaliyavana. He's chasing after Krishna, and he's just within arm's reach. Well, I'll just have to take another step and I'll catch him. Krishna's just walking nonchalantly. And Kaliyavana goes, what? I can get him. But he never. Of course, Krishna led him into a cave where somebody else he had taken care of, which you couldn't have took care of him. No, I was reading this Bhuchakunda story. It said, you know, the story is that he was fighting for the demigods for a long time, and they asked him, what do you want? He said, I just want to sleep. I just want to go to bed. Sometimes we feel like that, right? I just want to go to bed. Let me get home and go to bed. So he said, I just want to sleep. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says he slept from Satya Yuga until Dwapara Yuga when Krishna arrived. Six yugas he slept through. That's a long nap. Prabhupada used to use the word snap. Yeah? I'm going to take a snap now. So that was Muchakunda's snap. So anyway... So that story there shows the story of Kaliyavan. He couldn't catch Krishna, even though he tried. But then Prabhupada said, what does it mean then that he can still be seen? So his whole point is he's talking about this pratyagakshaja, that Krishna can be seen. Just like Kardama Muni was just seeing. He was right there, face to face. Prabhupada would say, it is a fact. You will be able to see Krishna face to face, just as we are talking face to face. You will be able to see and talk with Krishna face to face. So we have examples in the Bhagavatam, so many examples in the Bhagavatam, especially when Lord Vishnu makes himself appear. So let's see, let's just go on here. It is explained that no one can hear. So Prabhupada talks about not only seeing him, but it is explained. So here again, Prabhupada says, what does it mean then that he can be seen? So he doesn't answer the question right away. He says a little something else. It is explained that no one can hear the transcendental name of Krishna. No one can understand his transcendental form, and no one can assimilate his transcendental pastimes. It is not possible. So Prabhupada's adding, not only seeing, but even hearing Krishna's name. We think, well, I'm hearing Krishna's name. But are we? If we were really hearing Krishna's name, then something would happen. We'd be in another world. I was just reading last night, as I was singing Jaya Radha Madhava, I was thinking of it. Prabhupada gave a lecture in 1972 in Laguna Beach. So I read the transcript. As Prabhupada starts talking about, he said, this is our goal, something like that, he said. So at first I didn't know the context, because what happened was Prabhupada, as you read on, you see, oh, Prabhupada's talking about Jaya Radha Madhava. This is our goal. He had just finished chanting Jaya Radha Madhava, singing Jaya Radha Madhava. So he said, this is our goal. We want to, one place he said, in the song he says, Gopi Jan Vallabha. We want to become Gopi Jan also. So that's our goal. We want to be able to, with our senses, be with Krishna and interact with Krishna and see Krishna and hear Krishna and so on. So then he says, so it is not possible, I just read, to no one can assimilate his transcendental pastimes, understand his transcendental form, or hear his transcendental name. Then how is it possible that he can be seen and understood? Now the answer. When one is trained in devotional service and renders service unto him, so you have to not only be trained, but you have to do the service as well, gradually one's senses are purified of material contamination. When one's senses are thus purified, then one can see, one can understand, one can hear, and so on. So as I was reading this yesterday, I get stuck on this idea, actually. It took me a while to play around with it. When one's senses, he says, when the senses are purified of material contamination. So when your senses are purified of material contamination, what does it mean to purify something? In science, in the laboratory, when they want to experiment on something, one of the things they do is they have to isolate that thing. If you want to study it, then you have to have that just that thing. You don't want anything else messing up what you want to see what it does, for example. So you want to make sure there's nothing else mixed in there. So that's called isolation, but it's also called purification. So purification means you remove everything else. That's how you purify something in the laboratory. You remove everything else, so you just have that one thing that you want to study. So maybe because I've been hearing a little bit about this concept having to do with disease, for example, germs and viruses and so on, the idea of purification or isolation. So I thought, well, what does it mean to purify the material senses? It would seem to mean you get rid of all the upadis, you know, everything that's extraneous to the senses, and you get down to the fundamental senses without anything added to it. No kind of contamination. But this raised a question for me. I was thinking, then if you do that to the material senses, you remove all those extraneous, that you still, what you're left with is material senses. So can those material senses perceive Krishna? That seems to be what's being said here. So I was like, what? I was looking around here and there trying to find an answer for this. So actually there are some related verses. Sarvopadi vinir muktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate. This verse, it's from the Padma Purana, and it appears in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, first chapter, verse 12. It comes right after Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanapitam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir Uttama. So the definition of Uttama Bhakti is given. It's a very important verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Everything has kind of goes around from that. So just after that, we have this So that verse, it talks about different jnana karma. The devotional service has to be favorable, and it has to be pleasing to Krishna, and it has to be free of jnana karma adi, jnana and karma, and so on. That's called Uddama Bhakti. So the next verse, this Sarva Pari Vinir Muktam, this is also a definition of bhakti. Bhaktir Uchite. Bhakti is said to be Sarva Pari Vinir Muktam. First, you get rid of all the upadis. Upadis are the upadis that are covering up the jiva's real constitution. Vinir, Nirmalam. Nirmalam means no contamination. Actually, there's commentary on this verse. Is it jiva or? I think it's jiva. He says, he makes an equivalence between these two. He takes phrases from each of these two verses that I mentioned, and he says how this one means that one. So he says this nirmalam is the same as jnana karma adi, anavritam. No jnana or karma, that's nirmalam. What's mala? Mala means dirt, dirty things. So mala, Kali Mala Matane, this is Kali Yuga, is full of dirty things all mixed up in it. So Jnana Karmadi Anavritam is the same as Nirmalam. Pure, again, getting to this idea of purification, get rid of all the karma, Jnana Karma. Sometimes you might find that when you hear about Krishna consciousness, you hear the acharyas so often, they talk about Duitagi, Bhaktivinoda says in one song, these two thugs, actually the English word thug comes from this Bengali, tagi, which means thugs. So he talks about the two thugs, jnana and karma, basically. They're ready to, you know, take you down a dark alley and do you in. So you may think, well, I'm not worried about jnana and karma. What do I got to do with jnana and karma? But if you think about what is our life, it's all jnana and karma, actually. When you think about what is karma, karma means by my own endeavor, fruitive work. Everything we do is fruitive work. It's all karma kanda, you might say. Of course, it's not guided by the Vedas, but in essence, it's exactly the same thing. We're trying to get some material thing through our own endeavor. So we can call that karma marg. Our whole lives are. Of course, they're vikarma marg, but the principle is there. And jnana means speculation. Right? What else do we do? We're speculating and we're trying to get what we want by our own endeavors. So that's why they're thugs. Like Prabhupada said, no speculation, no meat eating, and so on, for the four regulative principles, and no speculation, sometimes he would say. So these are the things. So this jnana karma dhyanavritam, you have to get rid of those things if you want uttama bhakti, the highest bhakti, uttama bhakti. And there are technical definitions of jnana and karma, which means jnana marg, as it's described and prescribed in the Vedic literature. And there's the karma marg and jnana marg. So these margs are there. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that just as the mind is the relationship of the mind with the senses is kind of like the relationship between karma and between bhakti and karma and jnana. So the idea there is that with our senses, we don't actually perceive without the mind, right? You don't smell anything. The mind is involved in it. So the senses are subordinate to the mind. They don't actually do what they're supposed to do if the mind is not involved. So he said this is like karma marg or jnana marg. You can't really get any benefit from them unless there's some bhakti in there. There has to be some devotion. Even if it's kind of show bottle, you might say, it seems that way. If you're doing bhakti kinds of things, that will help you get what you want through these other paths. So anyway, getting back to what I was talking about here, this idea of purification. So we have the Sarva Pari Vinir Muktam, Tatparatvena Nirmalam, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. So Rishikena, now probably gives a long definition. This verse is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there I think it's said that it's from the Bhaktivinoda Samrita Sindhu, but Bhaktivinoda Samrita Sindhu is quoting it from the Padma Purana. So the Rishikena means by the senses. Rishika means senses, and Rishikena means by the senses. Rishikena, Rishikesha Sevanam. So serving Rishikesh, the Lord of the senses, by the senses. Now Prabhupada there says by one's purified senses or spiritual senses. Even though the word just says senses, it doesn't say spiritual senses or anything like that. It just says by the senses. But obviously, if you're serving Krishna, you have to do it with your spiritual or purified senses. So this brings me back to what I was talking about. So what is happening exactly? Are my material senses perceiving Krishna? So the answer to this dilemma is not exactly. Actually, your material senses can only perceive matter. Just like when Krishna came here, Prabhupada would often say, only very few people recognized him as Krishna. So Krishna was showing something else. He wasn't showing his Satchidananda Vigraha to everyone. Only certain people could perceive him. So what is the qualification to get that perception? Prema, bhakti, love for Krishna. What happens is that these material senses that you can, in a sense, they get a coating of bhakti on them or prema on them. And then they're allowed to function. They're empowered. You might say these senses, which are ordinarily just material and can only perceive matter, when they're saturated with bhakti. So they're still there. You might say, because I was thinking, well, what happens? Is it that your material senses just go away somehow? They're destroyed? But no, they're fundamental aspects of material nature. So they're not destroyed while you're still in this material world, but they're covered over by spirit. Yeah. Or at least they're empowered to perceive Krishna. This is similar to the question that's asked at the beginning of the 87th chapter of the 10th canto, where Parikshit Maharaj says, how can we understand Brahma, Tato Brahma Jigyasa, by the Vedas, because the Vedas are just ordinary words, they just deal with ordinary things. So the answer that's given by Parikshit Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami, it doesn't sound very direct. The Acharyas explain what the answer is. But the answer is basically, well, Krishna has given you this body, and this body has the power, the human form of life. You can study the Vedas, and you can make advancement in spiritual life and become purified. And that way you can understand. You can basically enter into transcendence. You can perceive transcendence. Krishna has set up this program, this system, and empowered words to act in a certain way. So by contact with those transcendental words of the Vedas, there are transcendental words, then you can actually perceive spirit. So this is the idea here. So I was cogitating on this for so long and not quite coming to an answer for a while about this, their material senses contacting Krishna. Then I remember, well, of course, Prabhupada gives the example. It's like a rod, iron rod in the fire. It's the same idea, basically. The rod is still an iron rod, but it becomes like fire when it's put into fire. So similarly, our minds, you can say, they become spiritualized. They carry the heat of Satchidananda or Chinmay, perception, transcendental perception. They become empowered by it that way. Krishna empowers them in response to our devotion to him. In a simple way, you can say that Krishna allows himself to be perceived, but he can only be perceived by spiritual eyes. So he does that. He spiritualizes our spiritual eyes by bhakti. The bhakti, of course, comes from Krishna. Ultimately, it has to be bestowed by Krishna. So then we can see. We can actually see Krishna. There's a discussion in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Yes, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Where Gopakumara is going in different places, and he meets some sages in Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, one of these upper planets beyond Swargaloka. And they're trying to convince him that meditation is better than seeing. You don't need to see God with your senses. There's a whole discussion that goes on there. And ultimately, Sanatan Goswami's resolution to it is, no, devotees want to see Krishna. They want to see him face to face. That's superior. They want to have that direct darshan of Krishna, even though they can see him in the heart. Just like the Kumaras, it says, they were seeing the Lord in the heart, but when they saw him in person, somehow that there's an additional element of that brings on ecstasy from that. So that's the point Prabhupada is making here. I'll just read this last sentence again. The purification of the material senses and perception of the transcendental form, name, and quality of Krishna are combined together in one word, pratyag-akshaja, which is used here. So that's the basic idea of this point, a basic point of this verse that Prabhupada is making, based on this one word, hyphenated word, pratyag-akshaja. We can actually see Krishna. Of course, people don't know about this. We know about it because of our shastras and our acharyas. You can actually see God. People make jokes about seeing God, right? Or hearing God. What do they say? They say, when you speak to God, it's prayer. If God speaks to you, it's insanity or something. Hallucination or something. But actually, Krishna does speak. You can hear Krishna. I gave a class some time ago about, because the verse talked about different, the senses in relation to Krishna in different ways. And I was, actually, maybe it was about hearing. Yeah, I was talking about, imagine, we hear a lot about hearing Krishna's flute. So we think, how wonderful would that be to hear Krishna's flute? But hear Krishna's voice. Sorry. Hearing Krishna's voice, says Krishna's voice is like the rumbling of clouds. So it's so pleasing just to hear Krishna's voice. And singing. Krishna and Balaram, sometimes they sing together. Imagine that duet, huh? Krishna and Balaram singing, how wonderful that would be. In fact, it says they sang, in one context, I forget what it was. It says they sang and they, all the musical, I don't know what you would say, the melodies and the, you know, all the intricacies of music, they're all combined in this one song they were singing, basically. They can do that. Whatever you like about music, Krishna can do it all at one time. Krishna and Balaram singing their duet. So we need purified senses to contact these things. And it's possible. Hearing Krishna, smelling Krishna. It's described in Madhurya Kadambani that in an advanced stage, the devotee becomes overwhelmed because each one of the senses is empowered. It's like when you, if you see something very beautiful, then you, it's like you want to concentrate your vision and you want to concentrate your mind on seeing that image. So, but if the sight is overpowering and the sound is overpowering and the smell is overpowering, the touch is overpowering, all of these different perceptions are overpowering the mind just kind of goes haywire. Yeah, so that's one reason why devotees exhibit different kinds of ecstasies. Because it's like the body can't handle it. In one sense, you could see it that way. Different things erupt and things go crazy. Because that kind of direct perception with purified senses, as we're talking about here today, that it is such an experience. It's unforgettable. Like it's spoken of, Sutta Goswami in the beginning, first canto of the Bhagavatam, he says, Rasugya, I forget the verse, but you know, he says, once one has that experience, if you have that experience of Krishna, some direct perception of Krishna, then you don't lose it. But Prabhupada would scoff at the idea, oh, last night Krishna appeared to me. No, if you see Krishna, you'll always see Krishna because you can't forget it. You'll be so absorbed in that. It will affect you so deeply There's no moving away from that real rasa graha when you've taken in that taste of Krishna in some way, tasting Krishna by seeing or smelling or touching or hearing and so on. So that's what can be gained by purified senses. So Kardama Muni, of course, he was outstanding character, purifying himself for 10,000 years, qualifying himself. And so in one sense, we're never qualified, but we're qualified by devotion to the Lord. And Krishna condescends to appear before us, or descends before us out of his own sweet will and his mercy. Okay, verse again. Maitreya Uvacha. Evam tvam anupasyata bhagavan pratyagakshaja jagama bidu sarasa sarasvatya parishrita. Maitreya went on. Thus having spoken to Karma Muni, the Lord who reveals himself only when the senses are in Krishna consciousness, departed from that lake called Bindu Sarovara, which was encircled by the river Saraswati. Interesting, we have this idea of lakes inside rivers. The river comes along and it kind of swells out, and you have a lake there, then it comes out the other side. Like Kaliya Radha and Krishna Leela, and Brahma Radha, where Akura saw Lord Vishnu. You have these Radha there. The Bindu Sarovara. It's encircled by the, and this is the word, Parishritat, encircled by the river Saraswati. So, Prangavinda Prabhu.
Kaya mano, manasa gira sarvastasu, no.
Atashri Krishna Nama, actually another word, verse I was going to quote.
Atashri Krishna Nama di no, the others look also. Jivan mukta sa uchyate.
Yeah.
So in that case, in that case,
Ihadasya
Haridasya Karmana Manasa Gira Nikila Shubha Vastasya Jivan Makta Sa Uchyate. In that analysis that you gave, you spoke that iron, assuming the quality of the fire, so touching the iron while in connection with the fire, it won't act as iron, it will act as a fire. And if it is ever get disconnected, it will go back to its dead iron or whatever.
Not exactly. It holds what happens in real life. It holds the heat, right? You take it out of the fire and then you...
For how long?
You brand... Yeah, you have to keep getting back into the fire.
So my question is like, when... Like Rupa Goswami Pad came to this world, he left his body. Is that spiritualized body or is Satchidananda body? I mean, I know he has a Satchidananda body in spiritual world. Is there a, there must be difference. I'm just trying to say with Prabhupada.
There seems to be a difference with, you know, these great Nitya Siddha devotees who are simultaneously, you can say, in Krishna Leela all the time and still acting on this plane. But generally we hear about the Jivan Mukta and Videha Mukti, right? Jivan Mukta, that's like one kind of mukti is Jivan Mukti while you're still in this body. And then there's Videha Mukti, which when you're outside the Deha, when you leave the body. And it's described that there are some differences between those two things. There is, although certain things only happen in Videha Mukti. They don't happen while you're still in this body. But still we have the examples of devotees going internally, and they're in the spiritual world, as you might as well say. They're transcendental to the body. So the extraordinary souls in their relationship with Krishna, these might say ordinary rules of how the material world, material energy, the two energies work, they can become, they're overcome by the power of bhakti.
So when they live like samadhi of Jiva Goswami or Rupa Goswami, they had their sadhaka body. Is that Videha?
Yeah.
Or
Yeah, in one sense, even in the Madhurya Kadambani, it's described how, or at least in the commentary I was reading, these very advanced souls in bhava, especially in bhava, they don't realize that they're dying sometimes. It's like they're out of their body already. So whether they're in the body or outside the body, it really doesn't make, it's irrelevant to these great souls. The body is just, and even we hear that Krishna just takes, the body is just running on its karma, or whether it's karma or it's Krishna, it's going on externally, but the devotee has nothing to do with it. He's really existing outside of it. He's transcendental to it. And it's just like Krishna is beyond space and time, so his pure devotees are also, they can be. Otherwise, how can Krishna's eternal associates, parishads, they're with him all the time, everywhere where he goes, from one universe to the next, performing these pastimes. So they're here, they're there. They're just, as Krishna is unlimited, in some sense, it seems like they're unlimited, because they're part of Krishna's srup shakti, actually. They're part of his antaranga shakti. They're part of his being, in one sense. I mean, they're not exactly Krishna, but in some sense, they are. The closeness is so much there that the devotee is, might say, almost one with Krishna. So the normal rules that apply, they are transcended at prema. Prema makes all things possible, right? But what's the phrase? You may know that there's two. There's agata gatana pratiyasi, which means that Krishna's achintya shakti makes what is normally impossible, it makes it possible. And there's another one, vidvad something, which means, vidvad means contradiction. So Krishna resolves all contradictions. That's another. So in other words, he does the impossible. Gopi Pranadan Puru used to phrase it like that. Krishna can do the impossible. What seems beyond reason to us, Krishna can do. So sometimes we can't quite get our brains around how things work because they're working under Krishna's rules. Something? Pundarik Prabhu?
In relationship to Pran's question, is the 115.35 I was just looking up. It says, Date Chahyad Yatanataha, just Yatamatsyadi Rupani. That Krishna relinquishes, accepts and relinquishes bodies just like in this case, Srila Prabhupada uses a magician.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, sometimes Nata means like an actor. It's just performing some kind of, the same thing with Vaishnavas. Yata Samitrit Bharato, Yata Sankarshanadaya, that the Vaishnavas and the Krishna, they take form and relinquish form just like an actor takes on.
Of course, with Krishna, it's different because
avatars. In the verse, yata samitri bharato, yata sankarshanadaya, it says just like these personalities, these Vishnu avatars, the Vaishnavas also, Vaishnava, I don't know exactly the sense.
No, but I'm saying, the avatar forms are eternal. Each one of them has an eternal spiritual planet. There's always a Varaha. There's always, so these exist eternally.
Yeah, but in the 115.35, it says, Date Jayad, that Krishna relinquishes his body just like a magician.
Yeah, so he makes it look like he's giving up a body.
Same thing
and
with the Vaishnavas.
Behind.
Same thing with the Vaishnavas.
I mean, you're not implying that Lord Varaha doesn't exist eternally, right? Obviously, he exists eternally. So Krishna's putting on a show when he makes it look like he's relinquishing. Like you're saying, it's magic. He's fooling. He's fooling people. So it looks like that, the person, you know, there. And of course, a Vaishnava, that's a different thing because, of course, then you get into the whole thing, well, is the Vaishnava's body spiritual or not? It's spiritualized, but so it's put into samadhi. In fact, Prabhupada does say that. It's not a material body anymore. Because that's not, just like Prabhupada's form that we see, that's not his eternal form. Okay. I don't want to debate the point. I'll accept defeat. I'll accept defeat. You're right. I'm saying maybe there's another way to look at these things, but anyway, I'm making it some qualification, you might say. But if you're convinced this is, yata means exactly the same, then okay. Yes, Prabhu.
Says, punastena eva yasyante tad vishnu shashvatam padam nakarma bandhanam janma vaishnavanam chavidyate. Says, Vaishnavas like Vishnu are not subjected to birth as a result of their fruitive activities. Just as Bharat and Lakshman, the son of Sumitri, and just as Sankarshan and other forms of the Supreme Lord appear in this world by their own desire, similarly the Vaishnavas, who are associates of the Lord, appear with the Lord and then return to the eternal abode with the Lord. The Vaishnavas, like Vishnu, are not subjected to birth as a result of their fruitive activity.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know that. The question is whether the forms they have in this world are eternally existing in the spiritual world. I don't think so. Whereas Krishna's forms are eternally existing in the spiritual world. That's why I'm saying there's some difference. Yes, Prabhu.
So I was thinking, what is the difference between Kardama Muni seeing the Lord and we are also seeing the Lord? Like we can touch him, we can see him, we can serve him, we can interact with him. So does it mean that we shouldn't have any more endeavor to do more than that?
Well, the point is we're seeing, and might say in a kind of intellectual way, at least when I see, I'm seeing marble and brass. I'm not seeing Satchidananda. I mean, of course, by definition, Krishna is the deity. So the realization isn't there. That's the idea. We have to have a realization. We have so many stories, right, of the deity talking to this devotee or that devotee in different histories of different temples. So Krishna hasn't spoken to me, at least in any way that I can perceive. That's the difference. Kardama Muni was face to face conversing with Krishna. So, actually, it's good to talk to Krishna. I find him a little tongue tied. I don't, but I was staying in Vrindavan. I was staying in front of Radhe Shyam, and I think there was Darshan, but there wasn't anything going on. And I saw somebody was just standing there, talking to Radhe Shyam, and they're just giving a report of their life or their day or whatever. As Prabhupada said like that too. If you have a problem, you go to Balaram. You go talk to him, tell him your problem, he'll help you. So that's a kind of practice, you might say. But we're acting on, I mean, that's what sadhana bhakti is about. We have faith, this is Krishna. But at least I'm not directly perceiving. I'm still a conditioned soul. I'm still seeing that this is Krishna form in the deity form, Archa Vigraha. In one place, Prabhupada compares the Archa Vigraha to the universal form because both of them are made of matter in a sense. Of course, the universal form is a conception, but the deity is apparently made of matter, but Krishna is appearing in a form that we can appreciate, because we can't perceive Satchidananda until. Actually, I had this. I was going to read this. I was reading the prayers, the Hansaguya prayers by Daksha. Daksha is an interesting character. But anyway, so he offers these prayers, Hansaguya prayers, And it says that he didn't make them up. They're traditional prayers that he was reciting. But here's one about I thought was interesting in relation to this verse today. When one's consciousness is completely purified of the contamination of material existence, gross and subtle, without being agitated as in the working and dreaming states, in other words, consciousness is not agitated as in the working and dreaming states, and when the mind is not dissolved as in sushupti, deep sleep, one comes to the platform of trance. So you know, trance means you overcome the three stages, wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep. Consciousness is not affected by these states. Then one's material vision and the memories of the mind, which manifests names and forms, are vanquished. Then one's material vision and the memories of the mind, which manifests names and forms, are vanquished. So the mind manifests names and forms. They're vanished when you're in that fourth state, vanquished. Only in such a trance is the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed. Thus, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seen in that uncontaminated transcendental state. So there's a verse from the Vedas I've seen quoted. I don't know the Sanskrit, it's just a few words, but the translation is, in order to know Brahman, you must be Brahman. You must become Brahman, because you have to enter into that atmosphere. So to know Krishna, we had to become spiritual because he exists on that in that platform. But his material energy is just sort of a show, we say. It's his separated energy. Did I write the verse number? I think it's in the sixth canto, first chapter. No, fourth chapter. 6:4:26. Yeah, Hansaguya prayers are in 6:4. Okay, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.